Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 90, March 20th, 2013. We visit Gigaparts. Hello, everybody. It's K9EID, and we're about half here tonight. I've got a real problem. I don't know what it is. We've got a new computer, and something's not talking something, but we'll make it through. And we've got a big show tonight. Gordon, I think it's Captain Gordo. How are you doing? You're headed off to the Coast Guard after a while?
I am, and I'm not a captain. I'm just one of the volunteers. But here's my volunteer news for the day. This comes from Radio Club of America's Carol Perry, in charge of youth activities. She said, hooray, last week the South Florida Science Museum of Amateur Radio, for which the Radio Club of America supports, has won the coveted Dayton Amateur Radio Club of the Year Award. And a lot goes to, in the big thanks department, to Richard Summers, who's out here, a licensed ham who was able to score a lot of equipment and support for the youth activities program. And Carol also indicates that Dr. Nathan Cohen, a member of the Radio Club of America, is going to provide a live demonstration, Bob, of cloaking. And this is where an RF signal actually passes around via waveguides, a person or a thing, maybe a jet, and it cloaks it so that you can't even see it on radar. And that'll be like a live demo out there. So some pretty neat things. Also got word from the American Radio Relay League that their classes are filling up quick for the Emergency Communications Course 001. And I've taken that course. It's a good one for all emergency communicators, along with all of the ICS courses as well. And the EC001, look it up on the internet, folks, because it's a powerful course. And you know, there's a lot of organizations that are looking for emergency communicators, and I enjoy the military organizations. I'm a member of Army, actually Navy Marine Mars. I better not say Army, I'm past Army, but Navy Marine Mars, and the Mars program, Military Auxiliary Radio Services under the military, and we participate weekly, and there's huge amounts of great training material working with Navy and Marine Mars, as well as those of you that are members of Army Mars. And tonight I'm dressed up to do a class for my favorite volunteer organization, and that is the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary. And for those of you that are hams with a tech license but want to operate on HF bands, once you're a member of the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, as well as Navy Marine or Army MARS, you can take part on some of the NTIA HF channels as well, voice as well as MT63 digital. So, U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, where I'm headed tonight, Navy Marine Mars, which we do every day, these are powerful organizations that you as ham radio operators who want to get involved with Homeland Security and the military can really sink your teeth in, too. And I'll see everybody at the Dayton Ham Mention at the many youth forums that Ms. Perry has got scheduled. Unfortunately, I'm going to be tied up doing videos for the upcoming AES Superfest, but AES Superfest is a goodie in another couple of weekends from now, so have fun in my absence. I'll be thinking about you from out here. So, Bob, back to you, and I'll see everybody next week.
Okay, Gordon, well, have fun, and I know everybody will be able to learn a lot. Whenever you show up anywhere, we learn things, so thanks for doing all of that. And we'll hold the fort down. I got lots of people to help me, though. One of them is George. How you doing, George, down in Mississippi? What have you been fighting? A kilowatt of solid state? Is that right?
10 kilowatts of solid state. I've been out of
gas
motor all afternoon. It's about the size of a refrigerator, much smaller than a 10-kilowatt transmitter would be. But, boy, it sure is nice because it very seldom gives any problems.
Hey, Don. Don Wilbanks is with us tonight. Don, you know what's going to happen. We're going to see a refrigerator move behind George one of these nights, and he's going to tell that that's what he keeps his beer in. But you and I now know the secret, right?
Beer? Never heard of the stuff. Hey, and speaking of the Coast Guard Auxiliary, if anyone out there is a boat owner, certainly find your local Coast Guard Auxiliary and take that safe boater course, because anything that will keep you safe on the water is great, and I believe you can also lower your insurance rates on your boat by that, and it's a great course. I took it many years ago when I was a boat owner, and well worth the trouble. So, Gordon, thanks for reminding me about the safe boater course in the Coast Guard Auxiliary.
That's great. All right, guys. Hey, I got a new thing that we just learned about. This is the coolest thing. It's called Mic Check, and it's kind of like one of the cleaners that you get, the hand cleaners, but it's for microphones. It smells really good, and it helps you take all of the crazy stuff from your microphones when the other people or yourself use them. You might want to check into this. Just go to checkthatmic.com. And Sarah's got a deal worked out with these guys where we're going to include one with all and each every microphone that shipped out of our plant. This is great stuff because it cleans up your microphone. And, of course, you don't have problems with any other kind of characters that use your microphones. It's really neat. And we're happy to know about these guys. They got a great product. And the newbie. So check it out. I think you'll enjoy
Bob,
it. Yes, sir.
That would be ultra handy to have at the radio stations that I work at. I mean, I have my own mic and my own studio, but man, for those people who have to use those shared production rooms, good Lord, that'd be a great thing.
It sure would, Don.
Well, that's
I caught a disc jockey spraying Lysol on the microphones before, so this is a great solution.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's why these guys did it. We met them recently, and they said, you know, exactly that deal, George, where they don't know. They come in with Lysol and all this kind of crazy cleaner, and it just destroys the microphone elements over time. And this is not going to do that. A lot of the handy wipe things you buy, same deal. That's got some really strong stuff that will harm the diaphragm, because diaphragms are very fragile in microphones. So these guys have developed this just for microphones. It's really cool. And I thought that everybody should know about it, because I think it's a wonderful thing. So check it out. And if you know where you like it. Well, speaking of things you like, we got in a little box a few weeks ago, and this box is amazing. It's the new little Yaesu FT3000. And I've been on the air with it almost every day, and I really love this little box. They've got some great radios, as you know, and there's all kinds of them out there. Kenwood's got a new one. Elenco's kicking around with some new stuff. And, of course, there's just so many of the ICOMs that we know about. But I thought we should take a look at this FT3000. And here's a little video. We'll talk around some of it as we turn it on and let you see some of the things that it will do. The operating manual is easy to read. It's a pretty radio. It's real pretty. It's unlike anything that Yaesu's done. You got to set the mode switch. And I was tuning around, and first thing, here's a cool deal. Both CW and RTTY, it reads it out on the screen for you. So you can kind of cheat a little bit. That's really cool. But the whole screen is so easy to use. They got a feature called Contour, and it's really great for receiving. It's kind of a little bit of an equalization system, but it also has a notch in it, and you can go in and really shape up some of the signals when signals get real tough. And of course, it's got the normal bandwidth. Now, this is receive bandwidth filtering and see where you are, and then notch the IF shift and all that's right there. And if you notch anything out, it shows that, and it spells it all out in that one location, which is kind of neat. And then they've got their IPO and the attenuator, and that was the roofing filter. They've got three roofing filters in it. Noise blanker works very well. And then all of that, the usual things you use, changing the meter and all that, it's all in that one particular place. There are the menus. There's 196 of them. And one thing I have to say is they have really spelled this out. As you turn the dial on the left, which is, does a lot of things, it's your second VFO and all that. But you can go in and, like, I just selected the one of the mid frequencies of the transmit parametric equalizer. There's a three-band parametric in it. And you just hit select if you, after I dialed it up, save it, and you're there. It's that easy, and they've really made it easy, and that's great. I like that a lot. So it was easy to use. What's really cool about this radio is the back panel. First of all, you can plug your rotor in it and operate your Yaesu rotor from it. It's got push-to-talk jack in the back. You don't have to go into the accessory plug. You can plug in your linear, and it'll follow your exciter. And all of these things are on the back. But check this out. There is a place that says line. That gives you line in and line out. You can come out and plug that that three-way connector into your Behringer mixer for equalization of audio and transmit. Then there's also a remote control you can get for it. This remote control is cool. It does a lot of things. It you can record signals, play them back, all kinds of things, especially in a contest when you need a lot of things and memories and so on are right there. I really like this little radio, and it's priced right. So hats off to Yaesu and what they're doing there. So we had fun all week playing with that. It was a good piece. One of the things also that happened this past week was George went down to Gigaparts. And George, I hear you had a really good time at Gigaparts. I'm really sorry I could not be there. But tell us a little bit about what was going on down there.
Well, we had a big time, Bob. It was my first time to visit the store. You know, our candy store, and for those who don't know, a candy store is a ham radio shop. The one we had here in Jackson closed several years ago, so you know, I haven't really had one I could hang out at, and Gigaparts had their annual ham radio day this past weekend. I went over a lot of good people there, a lot of vendors and hams, and they had a balloon launch that morning. There were hourly giveaways, and just a big time overall, and I saw a couple of new radios there, too. So, Brian, if you can roll the video there, we'll take a look. This past weekend was Ham Radio Day at Gigaparts in Huntsville, Alabama, and I had never visited the store before, so I decided to drive over.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The University of Alabama Huntsville Space Hardware Club had a balloon launch that morning. I wasn't there in time to see it, but my friend Arnie Carlson, K5ARN, was. The Gigaparts store was large, clean, and very well stocked. There were manufacturer representatives on hand from ICOM, Kenwood, Yaesu, and a number of others. And Gordo, I even ran across this guy here. Most of us will recognize Gigaparts as a nationwide ham radio dealer. However, they're big into computers too. There were well-stocked displays of all the major ham radio vendors and a good display of books as well. If you're needing some of the staples of ham radio, like coax or antennas, parts and accessories, Gigaparts has a large selection of all of that, but they were also displaying the latest technology as well with the new rigs by ICOM and Kenwood.
David Stevenson, KJ4OKJ.
There were hourly drawings for all on hand to win neat swag and gift certificates. But the one prize that everyone was waiting on
That's the giveaway day. And the winner for the FT950 is Kenneth Falk, 80BT, from Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Awesome.
He's not here.
No, he didn't have to be present to win. This was the monthly drawing that Gigaparts does, where they give away a brand new radio to those who register at the website. Congratulations, Kenneth, on that FT950. There's a lot more that I just don't have time to cover today. I talked to a number of interesting hams and manufacturers at the event, and those will be presented in the next AmateurLogic.tv. All in all, a great weekend and well worth the trip to Huntsville. If you're in the South, you certainly want to take a swing through Huntsville and look at Gigaparts there. It's a great store, very well stocked, very clean. That's what impressed me about it, Bob. I really had a good time and look forward to going back over there next year.
I had a good time. I went there when I went to Huntsville to the Ham Fest. They took me over a day early. That was really great. They've got a beautiful store. One thing I really liked about it is they have it arranged so neatly. You can go see each one of the manufacturers, and you don't have to be digging around in piles. They've really got it organized well. So it's a great deal, and they do a lot online, and something that everybody should look into. Gigaparts in Huntsville. I'm glad you went, George. I just wish I could have been with you, but had to be back home and stay back home because we were working on a bunch of stuff as normal. Well, I got some really nice things this week. I got two that I want to see if we can bring the slides up. I got a picture of a mobile. I worked him on the air. Man, has this guy got a mobile? I heard him on N1IXO. And this is a station that he has in his truck. He only operates when he's stationary. You'll see the curtains pulled up there on his windshield. But man, he's got all kinds of really cool rigs in here. And does he sound great on the air? And I just wanted to show some of the things that are happening in some of these mobiles. The next slide will give you a little bit more of some of his installations. There's his antennas on the outside. The truck that's turned the wrong way, but we can see it. It's on his mirror. That's an, I think it's a ham stick. And the next slide shows what happens when he, I think the next one is his antenna. He throws up this pole and throws out a 40-meter dipole or whatever. He's got a great signal. You would never know he was mobile. But he's not exactly mobile in motion, so that works out well for him. So kudos to you. What a great mobile. That's really super. This comes from a great ham, PY2JF, a really classy station, big signal. But he sent me the note that's very interesting. Check this out. You know, Leo comes on with us and talks about Audible. He really likes Audible. Well, there is a ham radio book on Audible called I Was, W-O-Z. Steve Wozniak, who was a beginning partner of Steve Jobs, was a ham. And he talks about it in this book called I Was. So you might want to check this out. It's very, very interesting that Steve is really forward about what he learned from ham radio. And how many times do we talk about things that would never exist if it wasn't for many of us that tooled around with ham radio when we were youngsters? And then there's oldsters also that are still kicking and enjoying it. But thanks very much. I appreciate this, Mr. Roberto, Mr. Ferrara. He's just done a wonderful thing in turning us onto this book. And if you hear him on, give him a call, PY2JF. Great guy. And you'll hear him. I'll guarantee you, you'll hear his signal. So that's what's going on here today. And I'm going to turn this over to Don. He's got some news line, and we'll see what happens from here. Don, take her away.
Thanks. Yeah, and getting back to the Gigaparts thing, that I've never been to that store, but I've been to the Huntsville Ham Fest every year since 95. And let me put in a plug for the Huntsville Ham Fest. It's exactly 3 months after Dayton. It's the third weekend in August. Newsline does the Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award there at Huntsville. If you've not been to the Huntsville Ham Fest, you need to go because it's like a little mini Dayton. So I just wanted to put in a plug for those fine folks. I love the Huntsville Ham Fest. And Gigaparts is a great store. I need to go check that place out next time I'm there. So, yeah, there you go. There's the Huntsville Ham Fest website. I believe it's hamfest.org. And a great Ham Fest. So, good stuff. All right, let's go ahead and get into this week's. Yes.
Bob? Did you pay attention to what Gigaparts does at that Ham Fest? I think it's really cool. They take a huge booth and cordon it all off, and they invite manufacturers. So in that one booth, you have about 10 manufacturers that they sell. We're talking about the majors, and they're all within their own confine, and they have their own cash registers there. What a great idea. So thanks a lot, guys, for doing that, and I'm sure we'll be there this year. And you're right, it's a really good Ham Fest. So just wanted to also put in a plug for that.
The Gigaparts booth is way more than a booth. It's like they bring the whole store, the ham radio section of the store, into the Huntsville Ham Fest, and it's just absolutely amazing. It's totally separate, kind of from the Ham Fest, but right in the middle of it. But it's not like a booth. It's a mini store. It's really good. It's worth going to the Huntsville Ham Fest. Third weekend in August. Let's go ahead and get into this week's news. So, Brian, if you'd roll that, we'd be appreciative. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1857, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, March 20th, 2013. There will be two global simulated emergency tests taking place on the Saturdays either side of World Amateur Radio Day, which is slated for Thursday, April 18th. From down under, Amateur Radio Newsline's Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
Greg Mossop, G0DUB, is the International Amateur Radio Union Region 1 Emergency Coordinator. He says the first global simulated emergency test will happen on Saturday, April 13th, and will repeat the format of 2011, using local time for each station. This will give a good chance of messages moving towards the regional headquarters stations to be delivered. The second Saturday, April the 20th, will see answers to those messages starting from the headquarters stations and being sent back to the countries that originated them. According to Jim Linton, VK3PC, the Global Simulated Emergency Test, also known as Global Set, is an opportunity to increase the common interest in emergency communications, to create practices for international emergency communications, and the relaying of messages.
The dates are April 13th and 20th for the twin edition of the 2013 Global Simulated Emergency Test. It will be followed June 25th to the 28th by the Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference in Zurich, Switzerland. Global Set is open to all three IARU regions and will be held on or near the emergency center of activity frequencies on the 80, 40, 20, 17, and 15-meter bands. The full rules concerning this emergency training operating event are available to those who register through their IARU regional coordinator. Modern Amateur Radio is the title of a new bilingual video produced in Canada by Donald Boucher, VE2XT. Boucher put the show together in full, widescreen, high definition, and it features some truly breathtaking aerial footage of the Canadian countryside. Here's a look at the first 60 seconds. Makes modern amateur radio unique is its international flavor. While the narration is in English, most of the natural sound background conversations are in French. But you don't have to parlez-vous français to truly enjoy this Canadian look at our great hobby. You can see it for yourself on YouTube. Just type modern amateur radio hobby in the search box. And speaking of ham radio videos, the organizers of 2 Oscar 12 London, the amateur radio special event station celebrating the London Olympic and Paralympic Games in the summer of 2012, have now released a 45-minute DVD of the event. The DVD goes behind the scenes, telling the story of how those 69,644 QSOs were made possible. You can find details at www.2012l.com under the news link. And finally this week, a follow-up to our story of a few weeks ago concerning the privately funded United States mission to the planet Mars. It's now been revealed that it won't be to Mars, but rather a sightseeing trip around the red planet. Amateur Radio Newsline's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
According to news sources, a team led by millionaire and former space tourist Dennis Tito plans to send what it calls a tested couple to Mars and back in a privately funded mission. The Inspiration Mars Foundation plans to start its one-and-a-half-year mission in January 2018, providing that it can raise funding for the mission. The foundation has carried out a study which it says shows that it is feasible to achieve such a mission using existing technology. Among those involved in the project is Jane Poynter, who spent 2 years locked away in a sealed ecosystem with 7 other people in 1991. Mission planners wanted the crew to consist of an older couple whose relationship would be able to withstand the stress of living in a confined environment for 2 years.
And that's all from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Taking the newsman hat off, and I've got the ICOM hat on because I want to talk about ICOM. Spring has sprung, summertime is right around the corner, and it's going to be summer travel season. You want to take a high-performing HF rig or a solid 2-meter mobile on your next trip? You're going to be away from home. You want to tap into maybe D-Star and have the world in the palm of your hand. Well, whether you're en route, on location, you're going to be on the go, and ICOM can help you take ham radio on the road. Doesn't matter what band you want to operate, HF, VHF, UHF, ICOM has got you covered no matter where you go. And right there, the ICOM website is the place to go to see that. Now, you're probably familiar with the T70A and the V80 line of analog handhelds. Have you played with the D-Star handhelds, the 92AD, the 80AD, and the ID31? These are the D-Star ready radios that you really need to take a look at. Let's start with the 92AD. This is a rugged VHF-UHF dual bander. Has everything you would want in a standard dual band radio. Submersible construction can withstand the harsh outdoor elements. If you're going to be out in the field, out camping maybe, has dual watch capability. You can listen to VHF and UHF at the same time. You can listen to 2 VHF frequencies at the same time, 2 UHF frequencies at the same time. Now, you get into the D-Star stuff. It has a built-in voice recorder in the DV mode and an optional GPS microphone, which will go ahead and put your GPS location right on your signal. This is great. I don't have to tell you how important this is for MCOM, emergency communications, and search and rescue. Now, if you want to go down a step, which really isn't really down, it's the 80AD, the IC80AD. This is another great dual bander. Full-featured dual band radio, extended receive coverage. It's the handheld companion to the ID880H mobile. It's an affordable option if you're interested in trying D-Star. It, again, is durable and splash-proof. Here's what I like about the 80AD. This is the radio I have. If you come back to me for a sec, Brian, let me show you something real quick. This has NOAA weather radio programmed into it. Now, there was some hail up by George in the Jackson area earlier in the week, baseball-size hail, and this would have come in handy. Just turn the radio on, couple of keystrokes.
Adjust the current motor vehicles when people attempt to drive through flooded roadways.
There you got it. You've got the... You've got that already programmed in. You don't have to fiddle around to find it. All of the NOAA weather radio frequencies are already built in there. All right, now let's talk about the ID31A. This is a feature-laden radio like you would not believe. Again, built-in GPS. It's built in right to the top of the radio, so nothing to add on. It's already in there. Compact and lightweight, waterproof construction. This is a UHF radio. It has a micro SD card slot that you can store all the operating parameters and, I believe, some voice recordings as well. And if you want to clone somebody else's 31A to yours, just pop that SD card out, pop it in theirs, and bang, you're there. Auto-repeater list for... quick access to nearby D-Star repeaters uses your GPS location and that list, and then it programs the repeaters, those area repeaters, into your radio. Amazing technology from ICOM. And if you want D-Star, ICOM is the choice. Now, make sure you go to icomamerica.com/hamnation. You'll find more info on the ICOM line of HF, VHF, and UHF radios. Y'all know how much I love ICOM. I've had ICOM forever. Love my 7000 in my Jeep. I love my 80. I want to get the 880 for my car. Really want to do that. You can enter ICOM's weekly drawing for ICOM swag, like T-shirts and hats like this I got at the Dayton Ham Fest a few years ago. You can learn how to win the monthly grand prize drawing for a free ICOM radio. It's icomamerica.com/hamnation. The official rules are there. Go and check it out. All of ICOM's previous drawing winners are there to sign up, and good luck. And now George has information on the ICOM drawing. George, what can you tell us about that, my friend?
Well, Don, I can tell you that you can register after every episode of Ham Nation, so that means you can register four times in March to increase your odds of winning. You might win the weekly swag giveaway, or you might win, for March, an IC2300H 2-meter mobile with 65 watts of output. The IC2300H is built tough. It passes the latest mill standard 810G specifications, including shock, vibration, and temperature tests. Make the IC2300H your rig for mobile operation.
So there you go.
I guess, Mr. Private Studio, it's time to go to my private studio and have a little smoke and solder for the week. you know, we talk about, we build stuff some weeks, and other weeks we just talk about electronics and some of the different components. And we covered inductors a couple of weeks ago, and very similar to an inductor are transformers. So this week, let's take a look at transformers. This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to talk about transformers. A transformer is a simple passive electromagnetic device based on Faraday's law of induction. A transformer uses mutual inductance to pass electrical energy, usually between two or more coils. There are many different types of transformers for different purposes, but we'll focus mainly on power transformers today. In the early days of electrical utilities, DC was tried as a distribution method. However, it was quickly replaced by AC, since it was easy to generate AC at a convenient voltage level, which could be transformed to a much higher voltage and then distributed using cables over very long distances. The reason for transforming the voltage up is that higher voltages mean lower currents, and therefore less loss in the cables. These high AC voltages are reduced to a lower, safer voltage by the transformer located on the pole outside your home. You may remember when we talked about inductors, we discovered that the AC voltage flowing through them caused a magnetic field to be generated. When two or more coils are coupled together, mutual induction magnetically induces a voltage from one coil into the other. Transformers can either increase or decrease the voltage and current of a signal without changing its frequency or the amount of electrical power being transferred. Some transformers pass the voltage through at the same level and are referred to as isolation transformers. A single-phase voltage transformer has two electrical coils of wire. One primary and one secondary coil are wrapped together around a magnetic iron core. These two windings, while electrically isolated from each other, are magnetically linked together through the core, which allows electrical power to be transferred between them. The primary winding of a transformer is connected to a voltage source and converts the electrical power into a magnetic field. The secondary winding converts this magnetic field back into electrical power. The schematic symbol for a simple transformer looks like this. The voltage difference between the primary and the secondary windings is determined by the number of coil turns in the primary winding and the number of coil turns on the secondary winding. This turn ratio determines the voltage available on the secondary winding, so it's also a voltage ratio. The number of turns on the primary divided by the number of turns on the secondary will give us the turns ratio. Let's say we have a transformer with 1,500 turns of wire on the primary and 500 turns of wire on the secondary. We would divide 1,500 by 500 to get 3, and that would give us a turns ratio of 3 to 1. For every 3 turns on the primary, there is only 1 turn on the secondary. So this is called a step-down transformer, since it will step down the voltage. What if we put 120 volts AC on the primary? We know the voltage ratio is the same as the turns ratio, so 120 divided by 3 equals 40 volts. Now, what if we put 120 volts DC on the primary? We get 0 volts. That's because DC won't pass through a transformer. Now let's reverse the situation. Let's assume a primary is 500 turns and the secondary is 1,500 turns. We now have a turns ratio of 1 to 3. So this will be called a step-up transformer since the voltage will be stepped up. If we put 120 volts AC on the primary, we get 120 times 3 or 360 volts on the secondary. There are a lot of different variations to the transformers we discussed today. There are multiple primaries and secondaries, taps on the coils, and many ways to get multiple voltages out of a single transformer. But what we've seen today should give you a good basic understanding of how transformers work.
And there's a lot of different types of transformers for different purposes, and we didn't talk about them today. We didn't touch on audio transformers or impedance matching or any of those things because I just wanted to get you introduced and get you a little basic knowledge of how they worked. And you can learn more by going on the internet and doing a search, but if you type transformers into Google, you're not going to get what you're looking for. You need to type something like electrical transformers, and then you won't get the toys. Well, you know, we've got a project we've been talking about coming up that we want some of you to build with us, and I've heard from a number of people who have already ordered theirs, and that's this AM/FM radio kit from Parts Express. You can find it at parts-express.com, and it's part number 320-084. And the cost is $38.29, but there's a lot in this box. The printed circuit board is big. It's a fairly large kit here. However, there are not that many parts on it. You notice everything here is already laid out on the board with a silk screen here. So we can see exactly, practically a schematic right there on the PC board itself. There's not that many connections on it. Everything is through-hole construction, so there's no worry about surface mount parts. This is going to be a great fun project to get you started building if you've never built anything before. Or if you'd like to know how a radio works, this will be handy too. It's an AM and FM radio kit, and we're going to learn all about it. We'll build it a stage at a time. We'll talk about how that stage works, and then we'll test it, and then we'll move on to the next. And I'm going to start that next week. So if you hadn't got your kit yet, go to Parts Express. That's parts-express.com, and look up part number 320-084 and get yours ordered. Should have time to get it by next week. And it comes with a good instruction manual here. Lots of details on theory and on how to test different components and stuff in there. So well worth the small price of admission on that one. Now, in our contest, you know, last week I announced that we're going to be giving away this little Alenco DJ-V57T dual band handy talkie from cheapham.com. And we appreciate them donating the prize here for us to give away. And I asked a question. If you remember, I talked about using an NPN transistor to drive a relay last week and showed how you can take a TTL signal and drive a 12-volt relay just by using that transistor. And my circuit was designed so that when the transistor went high on the base, it would make the relay energize. And my question was, what if we wanted the relay to be energized when the base went low? And I had an answer from that, and it was from Carl Lohr, KD8SKG, and Carl said, you just changed the NPN transistor to a PNP. Well, congratulations, Carl. You won the Alenco Handy Talkie here from cheapham.com. We'll be getting it out to you here in a few days. And for next week's contest, we've got another copy of Jerry Busting's Constructing HF Wire Antennas book that you can find at your favorite ham radio dealer. And if you'd like to win that, well, let me ask you this. If a transformer takes 120 volts on the primary and it steps it down to 12 volts, what would its turns ratio be? So if you think you know the answer to that, send me an email at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner. And I believe that's it right now. Bob, are you with us?
I am. We're fuzzy, but here. I don't know what's going on here today, but we're working on it. I've put a whole new system in here, and don't know what's happening, but we'll get it all ironed out this week. Have a nice little 27-inch iMac, and some of the connections or something are not connecting, but we're working on it. I've been watching the chat room a little bit, and I got a couple of questions. George, KC2PED was just asking, you have a transformer and it's got a metal casing. How do they get the magnetic field inside through that casing? You want to answer that one?
Let me see if I understand. You've got a power transformer and there's a metal case around the transformer. Well, the magnet doesn't need to come outside of that case. That's all going on inside. Usually there's a core in there of some type. It's square in a lot of transformers, and the wires is wrapped around the core, so the magnetic field is just maintained right there on the core itself. And having that metal shield around the outside kind of helps keep the hum and buzz from getting into all the other circuits located around it.
Yeah, basically that's it, is that you've got to keep those fields away from everything else, and that's why they do that. Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, that was a really nice treatise on the transformers, George. Of course, all your stuff is really great. Jeff, a K7GDE, he's got a 718. You know, it is so confusing today. Most all of the early ICOMs and some of the new smaller ICOMs, the 718, the 7200, they all reverted back to the old preamps. So you really need to use one of the high output electret mics, like our ICM. It won't support a dynamic. No, it won't. And you don't want to do that. But the real way to do that is to use a dynamic microphone into one of the little Behringers, and it will really cause those radios to come alive. Not only will you have the gain, but you will have the equalization, and that's so important. Equalization is so important. And every transmitter should have equalization. There is no argument about it. If it hasn't been proven to you, we need to talk. And we try to bring it to you here every once in a while. But we really need to let you understand about equalization, because without it, oh, man, you're just dead in the water. And we'll get into more of it here as we get through some of these shows. But the key to the 718, the 7200, the old 7400, the 746, the 756, not the pros now, all of those early ICOMs, we built the IC for them. And it's in the headset. It's also in the microphones. The 706 is another one. But boy, once you put that in there, that once you use one of the microphones with the IC element in it, that's why I call it IC, ICOM. I thought, wow, this will be easy for everybody to remember. No, I don't know why it's so confusing. An IC element works on ICOM. It won't work on Kenwood. It won't work. Why won't it work on Yaesu and Kenwood? I can make it work. You can too. But even though you supply the voltage for the phantom power voltage, or somehow to power that FET in the little IC, you're going to have so much output. That's the problem. You'll overdrive the sensitive inputs of the Kenwoods, the Yaesus, and all of that. Those early ICOMs can take that. They need that, but not Kenwood and Yaesu. Those have very sensitive inputs, and you can use them very well with dynamics. That's what they're meant for. And in all of the late model ICOMs, after the 746 Pro, 756 Pro 1, 2, 3, 78, 77, all of those late models, beautiful. They have the upper higher gain
preamplifier. The IC still works beautifully into them, but so do the PR40s, 30s, 20s, all of that too. And of course, the great 70 buck HM12 is just becoming so popular. It'll work on anything except those early Icons. Then you get a Behringer, you plug that into the Behringer, you use that 20 dB preamp, you have equalization, plug that into your 718. Oh, baby. Now you got something. And I'm always amazed when I hear some of the guys that we helped set them up and they got 718s and they sound as good as a 7800 or an FT1000MP or a 950 Kenwood. It's really super. So pay attention to that. Just make sure that you use them right. There's one caveat to all of that is the early 730, 740, 720, 730, 740. Why do they have a zero on the end? They don't have any preamp in them. I don't know what Dr. Inouye was thinking, but he put the mic preamp in the microphone. Oh, what happens if your mic goes crazy? You lose it. You drive your truck over it, whatever. What do you do now? Well, you're pretty much hosed, but not anymore. You take a little Behringer. You take an HM12 or PR20, plug it into the Behringer. Behringer into the mic input of the 720, 30, 40, what I call the zero models. Oh, baby. I've got a 701. That was the first radio I'm pretty sure that Dr. Inouye brought to America in the mid-70s. And I use that with a Behringer. Oh, buddy, people don't believe it because it sounds so good. And some of those early ones, you got to be careful because they had no preamp in them. And there's your kick right there. The gold line works beautiful into the Behringer, all of the late model Icoms, and, of course, Kenwood, Yaesu, all that. So I hope that doesn't confuse you because it is confusing. I do agree with that. But we try to help you with all the cables and stuff to get some of that confusion out of there. ZL1 FM's got an 830. Unfortunately, that does not have any input, I don't think, in the back. You go into to come out of the Behringer if you want to do that, and you want to build a pad. How do you build a pad? It's very simple. You take three resistors, and you put two of them in series with each other, the input and the output. Just take two resistors, tie them together, and then where they tie together, you take it to ground. It's a T-pad, about I start out with a 470 ohm, 470 ohm, and a 330 or somewhere. Just play with them, and that will give you about 20 dB of gain, and that's how you make a T-pad to properly reduce the gain to a microphone input. I covered that really well. This is a book I wrote years ago for the pro industry. A lot of hams that are using it. It's called The Practical Guide to Concert Sound. Back here on good old page, what is that, about 105, is a whole deal how to build the T-pad, all of the resistors in it, what you need if you want to build a, say, a 10 dB pad, you need a 300 ohm and a 430 ohm resistor or somewhere about there. It's going to be tough to find 430, so jump to 470s. But there's how to do it. And the book is full of that kind of stuff, all kinds of connectors and I hope things. Of course, it's on sound reinforcement stuff, but a lot of audio stuff in that. Get that from just calling our office and they can help you. But the other thing I got to be careful about in all this, guys, is the bandwidth of the transmitter. There's the book, Practical Guide to Concert Sound. I wrote that in 1976. It has helped hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of guys become front-of-the-house engineers. As I go out on a lot of these tours today, they're still carrying it with them. Why? Because of the last 30 pages, all the charts, graphs, things you can't really find. And, yeah, we don't all carry all that stuff with us. And today, even if you have a computer, some of it's not even there. But anyway, be careful with any of these radios as to what you do with them. A lot of guys spend a lot of time and money with big microphones, with mixers and equalizers. And the radio's got a 2.1 filter in it. You cannot make it sound wonderful. You make it sound articulate, like the Collins and the early Kenwoods and the early ICOMs, like 735. To some, it's horrible audio. No, it's not horrible. It's narrow. It's 2.1. Over the years, we have all adopted to listening to the radios of today. They're transmitting 2.9 wide. Nothing wrong with that. It's just beautiful, nice, full range. Make sure you have articulation in the mid range. That's what a lot of guys don't do. I get this stupid video voodoo audio, whatever that is. It's awful because it's too boomy. It is not balanced. I'm sorry. It's not how wide you receive. It's how they're transmitting it. And 3K wide, you have to have the right balance of all. You do that with some equalization. But got to make sure before you start doing all this that you have a transmitter that will support all of that bandwidth you're going to feed it from that mixer. And like an 820, a 520, an 830, a 735, some of the early 1000D, as great as all those are, they will not produce any audio past about 2.1, maybe 2.4. So no matter what you do to it, rolled off the low end because they've done hardware. They've got 0.01 capacitors in the mic preamps, stages between stages. They got 0.01s instead of one mic or 10 mics even. And it's all about LC, RC ratios. And they just haven't been able to think about that. You know, the guy just plugged his stuff in and then, welcome, it sounds bad. Well, it sounds bad because the transmitter is not made to do that, because they were all done in the older days when we were using narrow responses. So just be careful when you go jumping into all this stuff. What do you think, George? You add anything to all of that audio stuff? I bet you can.
Well, I can throw my 2 cents worth in there. On the pads, yes, if you're going to drive the mic input of a rig, you're going to have to pad down that mixer. Sure, you can turn down the master volume on the mixer to where the VU meters aren't even showing and the level's about right going to the rig, but you're going to have so much noise and hiss when you do that because the mixer's not operating in its sweet spot. So you need that pad there. Now, I'll usually use a 500 to 1K ohm pot myself, and then I don't have to figure out the resistor values. But either way, it works fine. And you're right. Don't go spend a lot of money on big microphones and mixers and equalizers and compressors and all if you're not running a radio that's going to accurately reproduce that. You know, a lot of people are trying to do this with mobile rigs, and yeah, it'll help it some, but it's not going to make it sound like a modern bass rig that has that wider bandwidth to it. And Bob, on your book there, I don't know if you noticed, but when Brian flashed it up there on screen, the price of that book on Amazon, they had one used copy and they wanted $305.24.
Yeah, was that a joke or what? It's 10 bucks. And I don't understand that. I saw that here not too long ago, and I don't know. It's 10 bucks. Call our office, and it's there. It's really helpful. I mean, every ham will learn something from it, and especially audio engineers. As I said, almost every venue I go to, one of the engineers or roadies will come running at me, and they've got this carrying around in their bag all those years because it's a wonderful book. I didn't write it. I just assembled it. It's things that I learned early on, and I learned it from all of my mentors, and I'm just trying to pass it on. That's what we're doing with the Ham Radio Handbook I'm redoing right now, too, and hopefully we'll have that dating or shortly after. So just fun stuff. Just fun stuff.
I've got a couple of questions for you here. Someone in the chat room, and I didn't catch the names because I'm not as swift at this as Cheryl is. She's got a tough job. But I noticed one commenter in there said he had a 730 and there's no preamp in it, does he need a Behringer mixer?
Yeah, see, that's what I was talking about. That's a zero model, 720, mm-hmm. 730, 740. It had no mic preamp in them, none. It was the mic preamp, first stage preamp was inside the microphone. And yeah. Over the years, you know what happens there. And it's really kind of a funky deal. And yes, a Behringer, that's where it really works. Or some kind of small mic preamp, plug it right straight into that mic because that mic input's looking for about a half a volt. And normally, microphones are millivolts. That's why you can't go slamming a output of a mixer into a mic input without some kind of pad because you're going to overdrive it. Because it's looking, that input, if it has a preamp in it, is looking for millivolts. We're going to slam maybe a volt and a half in it. But the 720, 730, 740s had no preamps. So, George, there's a place for the Behringer straight in. Now you've replaced the microphone preamp that's built in the microphone with the Behringer, and you got EQ. How cool, huh?
That is cool. And I have one other question here, this one for both you and Don, because both of you ought to know something about this. Someone was asking, where can they get a set of headphones that has a quarter-inch plug on it?
Headphones? Well, you mean like
with a standard quarter-inch
right
stereo?
Yeah.
Well, all of our headphones comes with one of these guys, mm-hmm. which is an adapter that plugs into the eighth inch. Now you got a quarter inch. So there you go. These guys with that adapter, all of ours. I thought everybody did that today. Am I wrong about that, Don?
I think with the advent of the iPod and the iPhone and everything else that takes little 1/8 inch jacks, they've kind of done away with the quarter inch jacks. The headphones that I've been using for, God, since what, 88, I guess, was the first time I started using these. The Sony broadcast headphones, they're about $100, MDR V6 and MDR 7506, I believe, are the model numbers. They're the same headphone. One side says for professional use only. The 7506 says for professional use only, and the other one doesn't. That's the only difference is a sticker. It has that same kind of plug that Bob's headphone there has, which is, I believe, Sony calls a Unimatch plug. It's got the quarter inch on the outside that screws onto the eighth inch, and you just unscrew it. And, you know, make sure you don't lose it because you might need it later. But, yeah, most of the pro large headphones that you're going to find at most of the retailers will probably have some sort of a modular plug like Bob's does and like that Sony does called a Unimatch plug where it's an eighth inch that plugs into a quarter inch plug. So, yeah, no, they're readily available.
Yeah, that's all I ever see for a number of years now. Mm-hmm. And if you lose your adapter, you can always pick up one at Radio Shack or somewhere.
Right.
Or Switchcraft will take care of you too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're around. You know, all of our headsets have that and shouldn't have any problem with it. So there are some things that we covered that helps a few guys and gals along the way. And sorry that Cheryl's not here tonight. She's not feeling well, but she'll maybe be back next week, her and her new lights. And I think that by the time we'll have all of our connections made, and whoever made the remark in there, that was the trouble. It was a new Apple. I got news for you. It's been an Apple with us for a long time. We did replace the monitor, but that's not the problem. There's something else going on here, but we'll figure it out. Well, listen, I think we got things covered. George, you have anything else that we want to discuss? I think we're okay.
Yeah, I'll just mention the nets real quick. We've got the 40-meter net that'll be going on after the show tonight. That'll be on 7.268, I believe. If I'm not correct, maybe someone will straighten me out in the chat room real quick. We've got the EchoLink net that's on the Star Do Drop In Star EchoLink node. That's number 355-800. And I don't know that we have a D-Star net tonight. If we do, it'll be on Reflector 14 Module C. And also the 20-meter net, I think they're going to try it tonight on 14.268. So if 20 meters is open, maybe we can get on there too, Bob.
Well, I was listening to 20 right before the show, and yeah, 20's open. So let's see if Bill K5LN will have 20. That'll be cool. 14.268, yeah, okay. John, we'll see you next week. Thanks for being there. And you got your cigar lit, or what's going on?
No, Dawn doesn't allow me to smoke those in the house, and I wouldn't want to anyway. I've got computers and ham radios and stuff. And by the way, I should have a decent signal on the net tonight because I've got my Carolina Wyndham, 80-meter Carolina Wyndham strung up here in the Kenwood TS-2000 in here in the shack working now. So it's only about 20 feet off the ground, so I'm warming the clouds up with it for the most part, and I've got a lot of RF in the shack. Every time I key the radio up on 20 or on 40 or 80, it kicks my USB audio interface off, so I've got that's why I'm not transmitting. I've got RF problems like Gordon did in the early days of Ham Nation, but I should be on the nets tonight with a decent signal. I'm out of the mobile tonight. So good night, everybody. We'll see you all on the nets.
Okay. We will be here next week. Gordo will be back. Cheryl should be back. I should be totally back. And we look forward to Ham Nation. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks for the chat room meeting there. And we'll see you on the nets after a while, and who knows where. And be sure and be getting your reservations in for date. It's getting close. So if you don't have a room there, you might want to check it out. Thanks, everybody. We're going to go turn on all the radios and make it happen. Here tonight, got the 7,800 warmed up. So look at 7-3, everybody. This is K9EID. Bye-bye for now. And all of the staff and Petaluma that puts Ham Nation together. And thank you, Leo Laporte, for the bandwidth.